Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. It's House.
I would take on any of you on sucking that bone dry.
Pope.
We shall not go lightly into the night.
Rooster.
Tone your shit down or you're probably going to die soon.
Milk.
Cigars, cigarettes.
And Bison.
Batting average doesn't mean anything anymore.
SMQBs, this is episode 225. Jets, how you all doing tonight?
Stuff is cold.
Great. Right. Home run derby night.
That's right. Some of us have a player in it. Rooster, who are you bringing to the bar?
I'm going to bring my favorite college team's coach, Neon Deion Sanders, as we get ready for the opening of college football this fall. And I just want to know how he's planning on dealing with life as a college coach for the first time without the comfort of his son at quarterback and Travis Hunter playing both ways for him, and how he thinks he's going to pull this off. We're going to learn a lot about his coaching abilities this year.
He claimed it was easier not having his kids on the team.
I don't believe that.
Well,
yeah,
we'll find out. See. House, what about you?
I am bringing to the bar, I think I'm allowed to, but you may remember the ascendancy to stardom last year of Jake Retzlaff. You guys remember that name? Maybe you know him better as BY Jew.
The
Jewish quarterback. Not going to play there anymore.
Yeah, the Jewish quarterback who led BYU to a very special season. And unfortunately, in the offseason, there's a certain code of conduct at BYU that restricts you from things like fornication. And Jake couldn't quite keep it in his pants. So,
God, imagine that, a college kid who's a Division I quarterback.
He didn't get the memo on that bunk bed technique they use?
I just want to, now that you're allowed to go to the bar because you're not at BYU anymore, I just want to tell you, Julane is ready for you, Jake, and we would love to have you. We need a quarterback, and if that happens, you will see NIL like you have never, ever seen it before. It will be very, very special.
And fornicating is explicitly allowed in New Orleans, isn't it?
Very much so.
Encouraged. Can you imagine the change from BYU to New Orleans?
BYU, they're so upset with him that they're secretly baptizing him as a Mormon like they do to the dead Jews.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Okay. I'm going to go next because I think Milk, I think we want to hear what Milk's got with all the breaking news. So I'm going to bring, I got to do it. It's a homer pick, but he was the first pick in the draft. Eli Willits. We can't get him into the bar. We might have to sit in the parking lot because he's only 17 years old. He's the youngest player ever taken with the number one pick. Now, this is high school, but it means something. He had 473 with 14 doubles, a triple, 8 homers, 34 RBIs. And 47 stolen bases while striking out just 4 times all season in Oklahoma high school baseball. So
realistically, what's the timeline of a 17-year-old to get to the major leagues?
So he has said his goal is by age 20.
Okay.
I think that's realistic.
Yeah, that's pretty realistic.
Yeah, I think that's realistic.
Like A-Rod was up there when he was 18, right?
Yeah.
I think that might be right. Yeah. I mean, that's you know, I think Andrew Jones was pretty young too when he started with the Braves. So,
yeah.
But 20 is realistic. And it's good timing too, because that's right around when CJ Abrams' contract will come up. So this could all work out. Milk, what are you doing? Who are you bringing to the bar?
You said it. We got some breaking news. There's been a lot of rumors about the Tampa Bay Rays being sold. Those became official, at least in an official agreement in principle about an hour ago. So Stu Sternberg has sold to Jacksonville, Florida developer Patrick Zalipsky, or he's the majority owner now, for $1.7 billion.
Kudos. There's no Stu, way they're worth that.
He bought the team for $200 million. So he's made quite a little bit of a profit there, but, all indications are they want to build a stadium in Tampa, which I'm highly excited about, as you guys know. I've been complaining about St. Pete for 5 years on this pod. So we'll see what happens.
I think it's hilarious that the Rays are worth $1.7
billion. Honestly am pretty shocked by that price.
Well, it's interesting because the Nats were on the market and they apparently the best offer they got was 1.75.
Wow.
This was 2 years ago. So they pulled it off the market. So it's kind of an interesting comp.
Well, what do you think that's like the Dodgers, get? Yankees, Phillies, those teams would sell for like 10 billion?
10? At least.
Yeah, at least.
I mean,
the Rays are worth 1.7 bags of Fritos.
Oof. Wow.
Well, yeah, their last 10 games for sure.
All right. Wow. Mm-hmm. Hey, Rooster, before we jump into some more baseball stuff, talk to us a little bit about one of our sponsors.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to you tonight about a software company that specializes in AI. If you're looking to add top-notch AI software to your law firm toolbox, look no further than Supio.com. That's S-U-P-I-O.com. Supio provides superior AI capabilities in your case management software program.
Nice. Thank you, Supio. It is the Midsummer Classic is upon us. We got the Home Run Derby tonight, the All-Star Game tomorrow. Rooster, tell us a little bit about what's going on and what we're looking for.
Well, I'll tell you, if you just look at these two rosters, and including the reserves, the National League has the deeper, more veteran roster. I think you could put up their reserves as their starters and they should still win that game. Look, check out this first five. It's like murderer's row. Shohei Ohtani leading off, followed by Ronald Acuna Jr., Ketel Marte, who's just tearing up the league right now, Freddie Freeman and Manny Machado with Paul Skenes on the mound. Unless... Unless our man Aaron Judge and Cal Raleigh just tear it up, I think the NL should walk away with this, but they never do, even when they're favorites. So it's going to be interesting to see if the jinx is real. But let me tell you who's on the bench for the National League. Pete Alonso, Corbin Carroll, Ellie De La Cruz, Schwarber, Fernando Tatis Jr., and others. I mean, like I say, that group of guys could tear up an all-star game all by themselves, and their reserve pitchers are better than all of the available American League pitchers except for Skubal. I mean, the guys on the American League who are not going to pitch include Garrett Crochet of the Red Sox, DeGrom, Max Fried, and others. I mean, this really shouldn't be a close game, but I bet the American League wins.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how it usually goes, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
They've only lost once in the last 5 years, right?
That's true.
2 years ago?
That's true. This should be the year that cycle is broken, but who knows?
Well, what do you guys think of the All-Star game in general? I mean, we talked about the snubs last week. We don't need to go back into that, but... You know, you do have this setup now where every team gets a guy in the All-Star game.
On the team or in the game?
Well, on the team. Everybody gets one All-Star.
Used to be that way. There was a time when I was a kid where that was the rule.
Yeah.
And I think this game is for the kids. And if you're a kid and you're living in Pittsburgh or a place like that, Milwaukee, you want to see somebody from your team in the All-Star game. And I don't have a problem with that. They should have one from every team. I know House doesn't agree with me.
I do not agree with it.
I don't agree with either.
Who is Kyle Stowers on the Miami Marlins? I mean, nobody knows who that person is.
Fans of the Marlins do.
Well, are there fans of the Marlins? I mean, I guess he's batting .293 with 19 home runs and 54 RBIs. So I guess those numbers, I don't know.
He's got a .911 OPS. I mean,
okay, fine. Okay, fine. So that was a bad example. Yeah. Also, by the way, what is a legend pick? Why is Clayton Kershaw in the All-Star game? What is a legend pick? I've not heard of this before.
Yeah, that's a new one.
What the fuck is a legend pick? Are you making that up?
I don't. No, that's what it's listed on the Major League Baseball All-Star site. He is on there as a legend.
He's the only one. The AL does not have a legend pick.
I don't know. You started out Bison referring to it as the Midsummer Classic. And there was a time it was a classic, you know, when Pete Rose was bowling over Fosse, you know, trying to score. Now it's like, oh, look, it's not just in the All-Star game, but the guys are mic'd up during the game. The pitcher comes in for two batters, and then they switch out for the next batter. And then Joe Schmo from the Chicago White Sox, and then faces somebody from the Colorado Rockies. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, but here's the difference between baseball and any other All-Star game. All right, when you're up to bat, you want to get a hit, right? There's no part of the game where these guys turn it off. Like, the pitchers aren't out on the mound saying, I'm not going to throw my 96-mile-an-hour fastball. I'm just going to go 92 because it's the All-Star game. Bullshit. They want to strike out Shohei or Freddie Freeman or James Wood. Mackenzie Gore, when he gets his chance, he's going to want to strike out whoever, you know, whoever's up in front of him from the American League, Cal Raleigh. So, you know, there's not a part of the game where you can sort of take it off unless you're talking about running the bases and running over someone, which you can't do anyway anymore. So it's still because of the individual nature that baseball has, you still get the best of these guys, I think.
The St. Louis Cardinals have, this one's for Tad Thomas. You can tell us all about Brendan Donovan, your second baseman, who's batting .297 with 8 home runs, a lusty 36 RBIs and 3 stolen bases and an OPS of .797. But let's put a Cardinal in the All-Star game.
Well, but are any of these guys in-house because somebody opted out? Like Junior Caminero, or my Rays guy, is only in the All-Star game because, what's his name, Ramirez or somebody opted out. You know,
yeah,
starting,
I mean,
he shouldn't be starting, but, you know, he's a backup.
Well, David Peterson from the Mets is in the All-Star
Jose
game.
Ramirez should be starting.
David Peterson, who's 6-4 with a 3.06 ERA and a 1.24 whip, he's an All-Star. So why not? I don't know. I'm
mad about Trey Turner.
God, he's bitter. He's bitter guy.
I'm so mad about it. But you know what? It's interesting. Apparently, both Christian Sanchez and Ranger Suarez were offered and turned it down. And Wheeler probably could have thrown a little bit. He started Friday night. He probably could have pitched something in it. I think there's an interesting mindset for some of these players when your team is really in the mix that the All-Star game will get you a little bit out of sync. Like, we joke about it a little bit, but a lot of guys' swings have been messed up from that home run contest. We joked about James Wood. I don't know that I'd want Schwarber, who's on a heater, I don't know that I'd want Schwarber in the home run derby tonight.
Again.
It messes up your swing.
Yeah, it did mess up Judge's swing 1 year.
And then the flip side of it, though, is, you know, in D.C., they skipped a guy's turn in the rotation so that Mackenzie Gore could pitch and then be eligible to pitch in the All-Star game, right? It's his first All-Star game appearance. The way he was scheduled, he would not have been eligible to pitch in the All-Star game.
I think the standings might have something to do with that.
Absolutely. It does. Yeah. It does. But that's what I'm saying. It's like they did. That's why I said it's the opposite of what the Phillies and Judge and their problem. Mm-hmm. In that case, they said, you know, we're not playing for, you know, we don't need you to pitch on this particular day and get us a win. Go out there and show the country, you know, what you got, kid. So that worked out, you know, for the player.
Let's talk about another All-Star game topic that's got House all agitated. And that's Jacob Mizorowski getting put
Fun
on
player.
The NL team.
Let's build a statue for a guy that's, yeah, I mean, the guy's pitched 5 games. He struck out 12 Dodgers in the first whatever innings. Fun story. You know, he's a fireballer. People have only seen him one time through. Let's see how he does against some of these lineups the second and third time through. He's pitched 5 games in his major league career, and he is now pitching in the All-Star game. He just got called up. And yeah, he's been a fun story. He's a phenom, big, tall, you know, string bean of a kid. And all of a sudden he's like, last year's Skeens is this year's Mizorowski. Some players have some issues with this guy pitching in the All-Star game.
Well, Skeens
like
did
just
it last
the Phillies
year.
Players.
Skeens, yeah, just like
you
Zach
know
Wheeler.
How many games Skeens pitched before he was in the All-Star game?
I think it was like 8 or 9, right?
11.
It was 11? Okay.
Yeah, he deserved it.
Mark Fidrich.
More than five.
Trey
remember
Turner
Mark
said,
the Bird Fidrich for the Detroit Tigers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pitched 13 games before he was an all-star.
What did Trey Turner say? I want to hear.
He said,
I know what Castellanos said.
He said, what a joke. That's effing terrible. I mean, that's terrible, dude.
Yeah. Nick Castellanos said that we're turning the all-star game into the Savannah Bananas.
Correct. He did say that.
So the problem is the commissioner is behind this. And I think he's been pretty transparent about the fact that it's for entertainment reasons. And I have a problem with that. I do. I think if the guy was picked based on merit, I don't care how many games he's played. If they know he's that good, then that's fine. But, I can remember being a little leaguer and being just infuriated by the injustice of this all-star game selections. When one year I had three coaches on the team and each team got three selections.
Oh yeah.
I felt like my best friend and I were the two best players on the team and the three coaches' kids got sent to the all-star game. And obviously, here we are 50-something years later, I'm still pissed off about it.
That absolutely happens. Every little league. This is a reason
why
Milk...
That's still happening, by the way.
Yes, yeah. This is a reason why Milk is signing up next year to be a coach.
Yeah.
Right.
Jeez. I mean,
so some of these major leaguers, it's not just pride. It's like they've got it built into their contracts. They're going to make more money if they're an all-star. When we do a pour out for guys like... Dave Parker, we list them that number of times he was named an all-star. It's an important thing for a guy playing in Major League Baseball, and it shouldn't be treated lightly. So if this guy was picked just because it's a cool flash-in-the-pan story, then that's wrong. But if he deserved it and if he's in on merit, I don't care how many games he's pitched.
Castellanos,
they weren't wrong about Skeens when they took him after 11 games.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's gone up against some pretty good players. I mean, he gave up a homer to Shohei and then sat down the next 15 Dodgers in a row or something, right?
Yep.
I mean, he's pitched pretty well. I don't know.
Nope. Castellanos says it's just about marketing.
Dontrell Willis, 15 games before they made him an all-star.
Well, listen, I the good news is now I have a punchable face for this week, so stay tuned. Stay tuned. I didn't have one before.
The Phillies.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on the All-Star game?
I've got one All-Star game trivia question for you guys. This should be easy.
Nothing in the 40s, please.
Who hit the longest home run in All-Star game history and where?
What decade?
I'm going to go with Reggie Jackson, and I'm going to go with...
Boston.
I'm going to go with New York.
Milk, you're half right.
So it's clearly Reggie Jackson.
It's Reggie.
Yeah.
531 feet.
Wow.
And it hit something on the fly.
Tiger Stadium.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
That's insane.
1971. Yeah. And I saw it on my black and white TV.
You did.
All right. Anything else on the All-Star game?
That's it.
All right, gents. I have a mystery topic for us tonight.
Yeah.
All right. So, with the All-Star game, you start looking at all these stats, you start thinking about guys, and you start thinking a little bit about legacy and who's the best player, who are the best players of the generation. So I'm going to give you some stats here, and I want to know who you think has the best resume.
In All-Star game history?
No. Let me just give you these stats, all right?
Okay.
What are we supposed to be doing? What are the rules?
I'm going to give you three. I'm giving you three players' resumes.
Okay. Just because this is coming from Bison, guys, discount batting average and
ERA.
Right.
All right. So you may want to write these down, but here you go. This is player A.
Okay. Like a taste
got my pen and paper.
5,755 at-bats.
Mm-hmm.
1,706 hits.
Mm-hmm.
395 mm-hmm. home runs.
Mm-hmm.
A 296 career average.
Mike Schmidt.
1,159 runs, 995 RBIs, 214 stolen bases, an on-base percentage of .408, a slugging of .576, and an OPS of .985. That's
is this
player
someone with
985.
These are all active players.
Tell me 985.
What came after on-base percentage?
Slugging
percentage.
576 and OPS 985.
Are they in this All-Star game?
No, not necessarily. No. Not necessarily. These are just three active players.
Okay. All right, there's three of these. Okay.
Player B, going just right across. At bat, 71-76. Hits, 2007. Home runs, 359. Batting average, 280. 1,048 runs. 1,105 RBIs. 107 stolen bases. A 339 on base percentage, 488 slugging, and 827 OPS.
Okay.
And then player C, 6187 at bats, 1736 hits, 346 home runs, a 281 career average, 1120 runs scored, 1011 RBIs. 149 stolen bases, a 388 on base percentage, a 519 slugging, and a 907 OPS.
Okay.
All right. Those are your three guys.
Hmm.
Rank them.
Rank them in terms of who's best?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I feel like this is a trick question. And so I'm going to be ending up putting a Washington National first, but
there's no National.
Okay. Well, it's got to be A. 395 home runs in way less at bats than either B or C, and a higher OPS than either of them, and more stolen bases. I mean, A has got to be the most superior player of these three. And then B and C are pretty comparable, but C has a little higher OPS and more stolen bases, just a hair less home runs, but has played 1,000 less games. So I would go A, then C, then B for me. That'd be my ranking.
Rooster?
Kind of there too, and for different reasons. I have a more old school view of this. I think that what matters are runs scored and runs driven in. That's what wins games from an offensive perspective. And in less at bats, A has the most runs scored and is close to the others in runs batted in. And for that reason, I would put him first and go ACB.
All right. Milk?
Yeah, I mean, they're very equivalent, honestly. But I do like A. Is A Mike Trout?
A is Mike Trout.
That's okay. What I thought, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Yeah. So, I would say A, one, and then I don't know.
One of them...
I want to get Milk's ranking first.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. I think Trout's one, and I don't know. B and C, I could go either way. If I have to pick one, I would go C and then B.
All right. Interesting. You guys all got to the same place. Any guesses on who B is?
I don't think he's there yet.
Wait a minute. I do. Mark McGwire.
No. They're all active players right now. They're all active. All active.
I think, is one of them Machado?
One of them is Machado.
Oh,
okay. Not B.
Okay.
Not B.
So I think it's Machado and Harper.
You're absolutely right.
Harper, yeah. You knew that was in there.
Machado has 359. So he's been in the league a lot longer than Judge then, right?
Well, I don't know that that's true. Yeah, I think that the answer may be yes, but age-wise, I think they're about the same age.
Because Judge is the youngest guy. Judge is Harper the youngest
C,
guy
right?
at 350.
Harper C.
Yeah, Harper C.
Judge
is
the youngest guy to 350 home runs, and he got there 190-something games faster than the second
youngest guy. Youngest or fastest?
Fastest, I'm sorry, fastest.
Because I think he got to the majors pretty late.
Yeah, fastest guy to 350.
Yeah, I think he got to the majors later in life, as opposed to Machado, who was like 19 when he got called up. Pretty interesting stats, though, and I think the big thing is, you know, most people would say Trout, other than his injuries and playing in Anaheim. I mean, look at those numbers and think about who he had around him, you know, for driving runs in and scoring runs and stuff. I mean, nothing. Garbage around him.
Yeah.
But Machado, man, underappreciated generational player.
Yeah.
It's a shame. Trout should have easily reached 500 home runs, easily, and he won't.
Yeah, I think you're right. So I think the race is on for player of the generation. It's probably going to be Machado.
That's crazy.
Okay, easy does it. easy does it.
Well, he is underappreciated. I mean, wow.
The Phillies have had two series within the last 3 weeks against the Padres, so there have been a lot of comparisons because they signed their deals within days apart, Harper and Machado.
Yes, right.
And I do think both of them have earned their deals. Neither one of them became like this overpaid bust who did like a super contract and didn't really fulfill it. They've both been superstars since getting their contracts.
I think that's true, but I do think you do have that East Coast bias because, House, tell me the truth. Were you surprised to see that Machado has very similar numbers to Harper?
Not really.
No? All right.
I was.
No, I think when he signed his deal, his numbers were pretty lusty. And at first, he was a little slow to earn his contract, but he's really come on. And he's had a great season this year.
Yeah, he's starting the All-Star game.
Yeah, no, he's had a great season.
The last thing on this, here's their wins above replacement, their WARs for their careers. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a little skewed because length of service, you know, how many games you played affects it. But Trout's at 86.9.
Wow.
Machado is at 60.8 and Harper's 52.9. So
all awesome.
Anyway, that was fun. Again, Machado for Player of the Generation.
Let me talk about one of our other sponsors.
Yeah.
If you want to pair excellent case management software with a really happy staff, then you need to find Assembly Software and check out their product Neos, N-E-O-S. Those of us who have Neos, our staffs love it, and because it's intuitive, also because their tech team is available and very helpful, which is great. So check them out at assembly.com.
You're here. I'm a user. All right, House, you're going to explain to us why I should give two shits about FIFA Club World Cup.
I think I'm going to persuade you.
All right, that was enough on that topic. So
you probably none of you might even know that yesterday, while everyone had, you know, breakfast at Wimbledon on a little bit later in the afternoon in MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, two of the better teams in the world were playing a soccer match, Chelsea versus PSG. PSG had won every tournament available to them, five tournaments so far. They had a chance with two tournaments remaining, this tournament, the FIFA Club World Cup and the Super Cup between the Champions League winner and the Europa winner, they had the chance to win seven titles in a year, which has never been done before. And they had not even conceded a goal in the entire tournament, in the entire tournament of the FIFA Club World Cup. And they got upset in just, I mean, you could not believe what was happening in this game if you pay any attention to soccer. Chelsea won 3-0. So most people don't even know, because they're not paying attention, that Chelsea won a big title yesterday. How much do you think Chelsea earned in this tournament for winning that title? Any guesses?
Well, I'm going to go with $50 million.
Good guess. Any other guesses?
$75
million. $20
million. Chelsea, for winning this tournament that nobody was paying attention to, earned $129.5 million. Okay, so why is it that it's relevant to this podcast, to sports, to anything?
Fuck if I know.
Okay, what we just witnessed, which I really came to understand a lot better, what we just witnessed was the live of soccer. This FIFA Club World Cup is completely sponsored by none other than the Public Interest Fund of Saudi Arabia.
There they are.
I knew I hated this segment.
Yes.
The exact same sponsor of LIV. They are going to transform sports. They filled up stadiums. They had 80,000 people reported in that stadium yesterday. And they have transformed really not just Chelsea, but now probably Premier League soccer next year, because Chelsea was able to afford players. I mean, money drives. You can basically buy players on the open market in the way European soccer is done. And Chelsea's got the money to do it now. And it is just fascinating to me now. I mean, it's not like money in sports is a brand new thing, but particularly Saudi Arabian and oil money in sports is going to transform the landscape.
The world has such a collective short memory. The fund, the Saudi Arabian fund that you mentioned, is now advertising on national television stations in this country and others as a financial safe haven for people. I mean, it used to, 2 years, 3 years ago, they were afraid to show their faces because they're just dipping their toes into sports, watching all of the atrocities. No, they're fine. Everyone, they're well accepted, thanks to Liv and others. And everything's hunky-dory with them.
So when I walked up, I went to both the semifinal games at MetLife Stadium. And when I walked up to the stadium, there was a giant, I don't know what you would call it, like a stand for PIF, like Rooster's talking about. And I was like, wow, that's really in your face. Like, what are they doing? And then I added it all up and researched a little bit. They sponsor the whole damn thing, which, by the way, if you're wondering, there's been a lot shown. This is not really meant to be political, but if you're wondering why it was that our president of the United States, who has very little to any interest in soccer, particularly with no American teams playing it, why he sat through an entire soccer game and then took the stage with Chelsea, there's your answer.
Yeah.
You know, he is very tied into PIF and supporting Liv and supporting all of that stuff with Saudi Arabia. This is fascinating. What we're seeing first is the stage of golf, and then we're seeing it now in soccer. What's next going to happen is F1 and beyond and beyond and beyond. So that's why it's relevant. I was shocked myself, and it's coming.
I have an observation and a question. The observation is, you know, we've hit the point where money far exceeds values, a value system at this point. It just, we don't look at things through a value standpoint lens anymore. We look at it through a financial lens. Maybe that's the end result of capitalism. I don't know. That's just an observation. The question
it's
I have-
It's a result of cronyism, not capitalism.
Well, that may be too. My question though, House, is are there no rules or are there rules on these teams, these, you know, whether it's Premier League teams or Bundesliga or La Liga, whatever it is, are there rules that say what they can and can't play in, what tournaments they can and can't enter?
Yeah, it depends. Like there are FIFA sanctioned tournaments and there's tournaments that are sanctioned by whatever league that you're in. Yeah, there are some rules beyond about it and how you qualify for them and how you play in them. There are some rules, but they have made the choice of money over philosophy or politics or any of those things. Really unlike any other sport in the world, except for maybe F1. I mean, money rules the game. Money absolutely rules the game. We don't pay attention to the United States, but just imagine if at the end of every year, pretty much, your football player, you know, Jaden Daniels could be available on the transfer market, and then the Commanders could be paid $100 million, just paid to the Commanders, and that's before the New York Giants actually sign him to a contract. That's just a payment fee to these teams. That's how soccer works around the world, and that's why this money is so influential to the game.
Interesting. All right, you made me interested in that topic.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
I'm a great trial lawyer.
Let's go another 6 months without talking soccer.
Got the World Cup coming up, man.
By the way, I just want to say that, Milk, that's the other point I did want to make. There's a lot of controversy that came out of this tournament because nearly all the games, most of the games late in the stages, quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals, were played at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And why were they played at 3 o'clock in the afternoon? Because all the teams competing in them were in Europe or somewhere that's 5-6 hours ahead. And the concern was, we need people watching these games. If you put them on at 8 o'clock at night, that's 2-3 in the morning. So all the criticism, a lot of criticism came down that when the United States hosts the World Cup and it's during the summer when, you know, these guys were playing in 97 degrees and they were taking comfort breaks for getting water and stuff like that, there was a lot of criticism like, come on, that's not the way the game is to be played and let's have concern about the players. They're not going to do it. They're either going to play in domed stadiums where it's controlled or they're just going to say, we need the European people watching this game. It's pretty interesting there, too, that most of World Cup, when it's here in the U.S. next year and Canada and Mexico, despite the fact that temperatures being in the 90s, there's going to be games played most of the time in the afternoon. Ratings.
Yep, ratings.
Damn.
All right, Rooster, you got another supporter of our pod for us?
I do. Friends, if you're... Your law firm is fed up with your static website that looks pretty but isn't producing any new clients, then check out Digital Law Marketing. That's DLM, digitallawmarketing.com. They are an outstanding law firm website and digital marketing firm used by some of us and loved by those who use it. So check it out, digitallawmarketing.com.
Yep, great people. Great people, great work product. Let's move from soccer to the amazing topic of tennis. Milk. Yeah, this is
this
the
is your
snooze,
type of podcast.
This is the low
segment.
Point in the show.
Yeah.
If you need to get up and take a, speaking of comfort breaks, this would be the time to do it.
This is the time to do it.
Oh my God.
I'm so excited that Pope couldn't make this podcast so I could take the tennis segment from him because he really wanted to do it. But we have a new, well, if it wasn't certain up until this Wimbledon, it is certainly now that there's a new dominance and new rivalry between Alcaraz and Sinner, two young bucks in the tennis world. Alcaraz is only 22, Sinner's 23. And after that really unfortunate French Open for Sinner, where he gave up three match points and lost all of them to lose the French Open, he gets Carlos Alcaraz back yesterday. And just looked dominant. I mean, has overpowered Alcaraz at times. Lots of strong returns on his serve really frustrated him to the point even McEnroe was pointing out how very little often that happens to get in his head, but looked like he did yesterday. And now we have last seven majors, which is crazy, has been between these guys. And they are absolutely young as hell in the tennis world, early 20s. And, you know, Alcaraz had won, I think he had won 20 matches in a row at Wimbledon, which is insane. And there's really no one after these guys. I mean, this is now Federer, Nadal, part two. I guess you throw Joker in there. They kind of had a three guys at the top. I don't see anyone else that's going to challenge these guys. I will say this. I was very impressed with – I'm very hard on American tennis, as you guys know. I was very impressed with Taylor Fritz on Friday. He was one serve –
Not quite good enough, Boris Milk. Not quite good enough, Milk.
I was impressed for multiple reasons, by the way. But the tennis one was – no, it wasn't quite good enough. He did have – he had a serve to get to the fifth set, and he totally screwed it up. But that he's the best that America has in terms of male tennis. And honestly, he's not in the ballpark of these two guys. Okay. It was, I mean, and he's very good. But these guys are, this is the new rivalry in tennis. I mean, what do you guys think?
I feel like, you know, I feel like tennis is in decent shape for the first time in a while. The old guard is out and they've been replaced by some new kind of energetic, fun players, men and women. Some of the women who didn't even make it, Coco Gauff being one, you know, they're exciting. People like to watch them. I don't think you can say the same about golf.
Can I ask you guys a question about rivalry? In order for it to be a true rivalry, do the rivals have to not like one another?
Yeah, that's a problem here because I think these guys are friends.
Yeah.
That's a problem in 2025. That's a problem on every, you know, like whether it's the NBA, the NFL, baseball, tennis, golf, whatever. I mean, all these guys, it's not like it used to be.
Don't you think like Jimmy Connors and Bjorn Borg liked each other?
McEnroe and Borg didn't like one another.
Nobody liked McEnroe. But
McEnroe think, for sure not.
I think Connors and Borg liked each other. And it was a compelling tennis to watch them play.
Do you think like Michael Jordan and Bill Laimbeer like went out and had a beer after
the playoff series? Michael Jordan didn't like anyone.
Take it more recent. Do you think that Joker, Federer, and Nadal all liked each other?
I think Federer and Nadal liked each other.
Yeah, Federer and Nadal respected and liked each other. I liked it when these guys were kind of going at it. I think these guys were both wearing the same Nike white shirt. They're on the same team. They're doing the same ads with one another. Like, get in each other's face a little bit. I like when there's a rivalry that's like, ooh, this is going to be good.
You like Ilie Nastase.
Yes, yes. Or like somebody that you don't like an Ivan Lendl. You know, like you need a bad guy.
You want a villain.
You want a villain.
Yeah. I don't think either of these guys are capable of being a villain. They're both really, really likable. what may make one of these guys a villain. I don't know if you guys were able to watch it, but the crowd, it seemed to me, was really behind Alcaraz. Like a lot louder. For sure. With lots of cheers for Carlos, Carlos.
Sinner was a cheater, right?
A little bit.
There was there's some steroid accusations, right?
Well, wasn't there a suspension?
Or no. He never got suspended from like a major.
Everybody takes a little cough syrup now and
then. Right.
Yeah,
it was a little. Sure. The bottom line is these guys are very vanilla. Like Joker at least comes off as sort of like an asshole.
Yeah.
And yeah, like
this is the tennis segment. Of course they're vanilla. It's all vanilla. That's why it's not interesting.
Well, get used to these guys because I'm not sure there's anyone up. By the way, Taylor Fritz is the number fourth ranked tennis player in the country. I mean, in the world.
Oh my God.
If that tells you how far away everyone else is in this world. These guys are going to, unless there's an injury, they're going to go back and forth for the next 5-6 years.
Well, that's enough tennis until Labor Day when we talk about Sinner versus Alcaraz at the U.S. Open.
In the U.S.
Can we
Open.
Please talk about another sponsor for crying out loud.
By the way, one more thing on tennis.
No!
It was very sad to see Anisimova lose 6-0, 6-0.
Yes.
Say it, Rooster.
I'm not saying it.
It took 57 minutes.
I'm going to talk about this. Because you know how I freaking hate semantic lemmings, people who hear something and then they have to adopt it immediately and they can't fucking stop saying it. And I guarantee you that if our dear friend Pope was on this podcast and did the tennis thing, he would have said that the Jersey girl got bageled by Swiatek or whatever.
It's the first time someone's been bageled.
Bageled.
For 100
years. One
person
on the damn Wimbledon panel decides to call a goose egg, or what they would call in soccer, nil, a bagel. And then for the rest of the show, they're all saying bageled. And you know damn well that Pope had that written down in his script if he could have done this tonight.
Rooster, I just want to say kudos for calling him out on that.
Jesus.
Onward.
I was laughing out loud yesterday when you texted that, by the way. That was a story. Because it's right. So true. He was like erasing it as you said it. He's like, oh, shit. I can't say that now.
All right. Get on with it, Rooster. We got another sponsor.
Milk's partners at Injury Board are holding a gun to my head and want me to say that, no, I'm just kidding. If you are a plaintiff's lawyer anywhere in the United States, Europe, or Canada, and you value top-level referrals from good law firms and top-level education and networking, join Injury Board. Injury Board is a collection of the top lawyers in leadership positions around the country, Western Europe and Canada, and the camaraderie is fantastic. The education is amazing, and you get some of the better cases you'll ever get in a networking situation from the people you'll meet. Injuryboard.org. Check it out.
Looking forward to some Injury Board love this week coming up. So
that's right.
All right. So just real quick, we got to talk for a second about the big news out of F1. And no, it's not Sonny Hayes. It is actually Christian Horner getting canned. I think it came as a pretty big surprise when the news broke, right? But, you know, 20 years as principal at Red Bull, started at age 31, had overseen, I think, really two separate dominant runs for the team. And when the news broke, it was shocking, but in looking back, maybe not so much. Ever since the allegations of his harassment, or I'm not even sure what it really was all about exactly with the female employee, I don't know if it went beyond harassment, but you could see splits in the team. And one of the biggest splits was with the father of superstar world champion Max Verstappen. And then you look at some of the decisions they made about who would be driving that second car. I mean, what was it? They gave Liam Lawson 2 races this year before they sent him down and put Yuki in there. You know, and by the way, Yuki can't drive the car either. So, you start understanding that there's deeper problems at that team. I guess what I understand is there's really two factions in the team of ownership. And there was a faction that was pretty loyal to Christian and another that was growing less so. And, you know, it just looked like, I think all of a sudden, for whatever reason, I think the triggering event probably were the rumors of Max leaving to go to Mercedes because of the state of the car. I think a lot of people think that with the new regulations next year, Red Bull in particular is going to have a major step back. So there was a lot of concern that they were going to lose Verstappen. And there you go. That's it. He's gone after 20 years. It happened in a hotel room in London, I understand. And I don't know. I think he might have known it was coming, but
I don't think so.
Well, I think by the end he did, like close to the end he did.
There was word that morning he was calling for the replacement of one of the directors of Red Bull, Helmut Marko, who's like a director of racing, replacing him with Sebastian Vettel, who's a former champion and a great driver. And I don't know that was the catalyst, but he had called a meeting to replace Marko with Vettel. So he was still in charge that morning, and a couple hours later, he was canned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you hear him talking to the staff?
No.
The video of him?
No.
He sounds pretty surprised.
Yeah.
He was their only principal in the history of the team.
This is Nick Saban and Bill Belichick leaving football. I mean, this is people are watching F1 now because of Drive to Survive. But for the people that really follow it around the world, like this is, the writing was on the wall because of the controversy last year. This is a big earthquake in F1 racing.
There's a lot of, what's the word, Schadenfreude, I guess, in F1 right now. The people are kind of enjoying Horner's misery because he was kind of a prick Drive to Survive on Netflix. You know, he would say some things that would embarrass Toto and others, other principals. He was just too kind of full of himself. But I think that is all just kind of beside the point. He made a quote in an article I read in the New York Times where he was telling the author, look, someone back when I first started this told me once that you don't need to have the best driver until you've built the best team and have the best car. Well, right now they don't have the best car. And I don't think the threat of Max leaving is the number one concern they have right now. Their problem is they've lost their whole team. All of their engineers, their designers, they're all out, gone to other teams. And they need to refocus. They need to rebuild. And maybe he's not the guy to do that. Maybe he's just too set in his ways. Because they built a car that only Max can drive. I mean, Checo is a damn good driver, right? And he struggled with that car. Nobody else can drive that car but Max. Max is that much better than most other drivers.
Yeah. Look, we'll never really know all the motivators here, but you know, he had rebuilt the team once before. And I think, you know, success leads to that, right? I mean, it's like when you see coordinators get head coaching jobs in the NFL. I mean, the engineers, the designers, all those guys, you build a four-time world champion car, you're going to get poached for promotions and better opportunities. But you're totally right. I mean, he was a little prick, and I do think there's a lot of people in the grid doing a little jig right now. Yep. But
someone's going to pick him up though fast.
Yeah,
he's too good. Just Ferrari on the sidelines.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Who's going to talk a little bit of the Open? I got an email from Fantasy Golf Major, so it means that there must be a big tournament coming.
Well, that's interesting because I have not gotten that email, so that's concerning.
Well, I think the guys in the top five get a little head start from the last time. So
it's been a while since you've been in the money milk.
Boy. Yeah.
Oh Jesus. Well, yeah. Here we go. It's Open Week, and I love when I'm going to be in a conference in California during Open Week. Can we not do that? By the way, have AHA conferences in California during the British Open?
What are you talking about?
I have to get up at 6 in the morning?
No. We leave the bar at 2 a.m. and put it on. It's perfect.
Damn it. Royal Portrush, back to Northern Ireland since 2019, where you know who won it in 2019, Nace.
Shane Lowry.
No, you don't. Shane Lowry. Schauffele won it last year at Royal Troon. I have no freaking clue who's going to win it this year. Scheffler, this is actually his worst major out of, you know, if you're going to have a flaw on Scheffler. I think his best finish in a British Open is seventh. McIlroy is playing really well back in his hometown. Of course, last time they played there, he didn't even make the cut. So will the pressure of being in Northern Ireland get to him? I don't know. You got Xander. Will Bryson come through? I actually think John Rahm's playing very well lately in Europe. So I don't know. Who do you have winning this thing?
You want me to give it to you again?
You did every single time.
Right.
You did predict.
And then
I
give it, and then one of you guys finishes in the money. So Pope, take out your pencil and your pad so you can make your $20. Put your money on Robert McIntyre.
Who?
Robert McIntyre will finish in the top five.
Okay.
Locktoberfest.
You know what I've noticed is that when House gives these kind of tips, and then we pick our fantasy golf majors teams, he won't have Robert McIntyre on his
team.
That's
not true. That's not true. Listen, I like Oberg. He's consistent. I think Morikawa is still the best ball striker on the tour. And while there's lots of other elements to deal with over at Portrush other than just ball striking, I like Morikawa, but I still think you got to put your money on somebody like Rory, somebody like Lowry, somebody like McIntyre. I just give the edge to these guys who know the conditions, who know this course. I was fortunate to play this once. It is my favorite ever. And it's the only one outside the Great Britain mainland that the Open's even been at. It's the only time they've gone outside of Great Britain is for Portrush. Now they've already gotten a second one since 2019. So it's a very, very special course. It can be brutal, and there is some rain in the forecast. Mm. So there will be conditions. Put your money on the Europeans.
Yeah.
All right. It just never looks any fun, the British. Like, they always look like they're miserable out there, right? The wind is blowing, it's raining. They all look like they're just like, get me to the locker room. Get me out of here.
Everyone's always talking about the U.S. Open, and like, I personally would probably shoot, I don't know, 300 at Oakmont. But I think I would also shoot 300, maybe worse, at a British Open too, just based on those conditions.
Yeah.
It always looks rain, miserable. The wind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pope and I played at Old Head in Ireland one time, and our caddy, it was a par three, and you had like a straight shot across the ocean to the green, and the ocean opened up on the left. And the caddy was like, I want you to aim 90 degrees to the right.
Yep.
And he said, people never listen to me when I tell them to do this. So he said, I caddied for Phil Mickelson one time. The guy gets out of three wood and tries to go at the green and put like five in the ocean. He said he got a 13 on this hole because he wouldn't listen to me.
Shocking that he went with the three wood and wouldn't listen.
Yeah.
Is that when Pope didn't hit whiffed?
Yeah, that was the time Pope whiffed on the shot and the ball went backwards.
Oh, God.
Oh, good one. That's hard to do.
We should put that up. By the way, to all of our listeners, if you haven't checked it out yet, www.smqbs.net. We now have a website with beautiful illustrations of the five of us, and maybe we can get up the video from Oldhead on
that. I think that should be our first video.
18th hole, looking right at the.
We should do it.
18th hole, looking right at the lighthouse.
We had another good one this weekend, apparently.
Yeah.
Hope you can't miss these podcasts. It's just we're gonna do this to you if you guys, miss us.
It's 5 o'clock on Mondays, Pope. It's 5 o'clock on Mondays.
All right. Cooper Flagg segment.
Who's got a punch?
It's this week's punchable face.
So this is a slap, and this one is being given by Brian Pope. His social security number is such and such, and he lives in Dallas. So when the Secret Service and the ICE and CIA come Listen, I would say this no matter who the leader is of the greatest nation in the world. But listen, when it's time for a team to celebrate a trophy, you got to get off the stage. You guys have got to see this video. It's really, really funny. So they're about to raise the FIFA Club World Cup trophy. And like three players on Chelsea are saying to the United States president, sir, you need to leave. It's time for the team to lift up the trophy. And the FIFA president is coming over to him and saying, like, we need to. He's like, I'm not leaving. As Milk would famously say, I'm not leaving. And so the players are like, oh, well, I guess we'll just lift up the trophy. And as they're lifting up the trophy and they're jumping up and down, the FIFA president basically takes him by the collar and brings him to the back. Listen, I don't want to do this to the president.
Do it.
Again.
Do it.
Yes, you do.
Step on his throat.
I don't want to do this. I want to respect the office of the president. But when teams are celebrating, let it be about the team. Please, let it be about the team. That's all I'm saying. I would say this to President Obama, President Clinton, any of them. Let it be about the team. I'm sorry, Milk. And that punch was delivered by Brian Pope. Fair. He lives in Dallas, Texas.
Good one. That was a good one.
I have a punch. I didn't come into tonight with a punch, but I'm going to punch Trey Turner.
Oh, my God.
Come on, man.
Oh, my God.
Someone needed to punch him.
This is ridiculous. I mean, why shit on this kid's parade, right? We talked about this earlier. Jacob Mizorowski, you know, he's had six starts. But Trey Turner comes out and says it's not the all-star game in the sense that the best players go there or people have had the best season, right? I mean, like, what did he say? It's whoever sells the most tickets or has been put on social media the most. That's essentially, why do you have to do that to the kid? You know what? Why? Why, Trey? I like Trey Turner. I'm a Trey Turner fan, but I kind of hope Mizorowski gets an opportunity to stick one in his ear.
you know that letter B that you had tonight, Manny Machado? Yeah, he's got 107 hits. Trey Turner, he's got 112. Trey Turner has got every reason to have beef.
Not with the pitcher. He didn't not make the team because of a pitcher. Sorry, sour grapes. You got to punch Trey. You're better than that, buddy. How about a lasso?
I've got one.
All right.
Nice.
Believe it or not, I'm giving the lasso to the same guy I took to the bar. He's really not one of my favorite human beings, but an older story came out in the today recapping a press conference that Deion Sanders had last year after the Buffs smoked then undefeated UCF 48-21 in Orlando. And UCF had their gaggle of reporters there asking him questions at the post-game press conference. And one of these reporters was an intern at the student paper and digital paper, 21-year-old guy named Andrew Cherico, who suffers with degenerative neuromuscular disease, SMA, and was, after a 17-hour day, gutting it out, waiting for Deion to answer his questions, and asked him a question about how they stopped the UCF star running back in this game. And before he answered the question, Deion just went off on how much he respected this guy for doing, you know, for being persistent and toughing it out. He said he had a bit of a idea of how hard it was for him to be wheelchair bound in these conditions because he had been temporarily wheelchair bound when he had his toes amputated. Anyway, he just made this guy's day and turned him into a minor celebrity. And it just goes to show you that even the biggest megalomaniacs can do some nice things for other people in the world. And I just want to congratulate Deion. I didn't know about that story when it happened, but it was the NCAA was putting it out today as we're getting closer to the beginning of the college football season.
All right. Good one. Anybody else got a lasso? How about a buzzer beater?
Very fast buzzer beater. Here's to continued rebounding good health for Wemby. Victor Wembanyama has been officially cleared to return to play basketball. You'll remember last year, in kind of a surprise, his season got cut short with a blood clot. And, you know, that could be a really, really scary injury for any professional athlete. A guy of his height and size, that's scary. And he's one of the most promising future players and current players in the NBA. And it's good to hear that he could get a full season under his belt. So that was some good news today. Here's to Wemby having a full healthy season next year.
Like to hear that.
Yeah.
Any other buzzer beaters?
I'm going to use my time to box you into a corner real quick, Bison.
Everyone
knows we each have a player in the home run derby contest tonight, James Wood for the Nats and Junior Caminero for the Rays. I'd like to place a wager on who hits more home runs.
All right, let's do it.
You throw out a number.
By the way, Wood has 24 home runs on the season. Caminero has 23.
$25.
I'll put $50 on it.
$25.
Wow. $25. Oh, no, I'm putting 50.
Yeah, you threw it over to him.
If you don't want 50, if you don't feel that confident, if you don't want 50, that's fine.
$50. All right, I'm in. Let's go, baby.
All right, that's it. It's on.
Gotta need action.
That's right. All right, game on. Watch the Home Run Derby tonight. Good show, guys. Junior. Touched on a lot of stuff. Catch you next week. See you guys.
Go Birds.
Yeah.